Looking at chapter 3. A chapter with 30 verses. We'll read the chapter. And then what we'll do is we'll go over the chapter briefly. I think one of the challenges of dealing with a chapter like this evening is, first of all, that some of you will be very familiar with this chapter. And to some of you, it may not be quite so familiar. So this is how we're going to tackle it. We're going to read the chapter together. I'll summarise the facts that come out of the chapter so that the narrative is clear. And then what we'll do is we'll look at four key points in this chapter, things that we can learn from. So Daniel chapter 3 and verse number 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Jura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then an herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. Whosoever falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Therefore at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all the kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshippeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now, if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we're not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. He commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, rose up in haste, and spake, and said unto his counsellors, Did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, True, O king. He answered and said, Lo, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes, governors, captains, king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. And Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. And the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. And that is our reading for this evening. So the first thing that we notice, following on from chapter 2, the first thing that we notice is that Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold. It was 90 feet high. It was 9 feet wide. It was made of gold. And he set it up in the plain of Jura. One of the things that comes clearly through in this chapter is that he then summoned just about anyone who was anyone to be there. You get this list of all the officials that he wanted to make sure that they were present. They all had to come. And you'll notice in verse number 2 it says, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image. When you go back a chapter or two and you find out what had happened to Daniel, he'd been made ruler of the province of Babylon. But the empire, the Babylonian Empire, was bigger than that. And the call of the of King Nebuchadnezzar was widespread. It called people from all over. It was quite a thing. So they all got summoned. And as they're all standing there for, if you like, a state occasion, we're used to that. We see these events on television. The great and the good. And as they were all standing there, the king's herald passed on the instructions. And it was this: peoples, nations, languages. So there's a multiplication. People from all over the place, from different backgrounds, different places. When you hear the sound of the orchestra, I'm going to say orchestra because I don't want to repeat all these different instruments, right? And if I was, you'd still get all kinds of music as well. So when they heard the sound of the orchestra, then they were to bow down and worship the image. And when the instruction went out and when the music played, that's exactly what happened. Because it had been made clear to them that the penalty for non-compliance was that they'd just be thrown into a fiery furnace without any pausing for investigation. If you don't do it, you're in there. So that is what happened. Except it didn't quite happen like that. Because there were these three men, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, so that's the names that they were given in Babylon. Earlier on in chapter 1 you get their Hebrew names. And the question is raised as to why these three men have objected to doing what they have been commanded. And in this environment, there will always be men that are jealous. Jealous of the position that these three characters have been given. Strangers, foreigners, Jewish people, taking the jobs that really should belong to, and we know these things. It's the kind of thing we hear today. And so they come, and they get a message to the king, and the message is that there are three of your appointees. It gets personal to the king now. It's not just about the disobey. You put them in that position, and they are not doing as you've instructed all of us to do. So the king was furious. In his rage, he summoned the three men, and he asked them, "Is this true? I'll give you a second chance. When you hear the music, you bow down. Otherwise, you're in the fiery furnace." But there's something quite interesting at the end of all of that, because when Nebuchadnezzar poses this question, he says, "Who's God can do this? Who is the God who will deliver you?" That's the question. So he's a very powerful man, and he's used to getting his own way. And not only that, well, we'll think about that in a moment. Who is the God? This is an important bit that we don't want to miss. The challenge that is posed in that question, who is the God who will deliver you? And the response comes back, our God is able to deliver us. He's not only able to deliver us, wait for it, from the fiery furnace, and he will. But if he doesn't, we're still not going to do what you've told us to do. And we'll think about that in a moment as well. So three men are bound. And we read that in his rage, the king orders that the furnace should be stoked up even more than usual, to the point where the men whose job it was, the strong men whose job it was to throw these three characters into the fiery furnace, they themselves perished because of the extreme heat. And so it would be expected that these three men, when they got thrown into the fiery furnace, would have no chance. And it would be a quick death because of the heat. As I was thinking about that, I was thinking about how in this country, Christians have been burned at the stake I remember a visit to Oxford with Heather's sister, and we walked down the street, and there's a sort of like a cross in the main street in Oxford, the site where Latimer and Ridley were burned at the stake. A bit further down, there's a memorial to them as well, but there's just a cross in the paving in the road. And the thought there was that when people were burned at the stake, it wasn't a quick death. So that the pain, if you like, was extended. This one, the intention was that in his rage, that these people would be removed immediately. And to his great surprise, and we're not told much about this as to what it looked like or how it was possible, but we do know that he could see what was going on in there. It's little things like that that sometimes when you're going over a story you know really well, and then you pause for a minute and you think, oh, wait a minute, he could actually see what was going in. I wonder how that was. Can't tell you. But what he said was, how many men did we throw in? Three. Well, he knew that. Well, why am I seeing four? And why are they walking around in the fire? And why are they not harmed? And why? What about this fourth person looks different to them? Now, even a man with a heathen kind of background, he recognises that this is something way out of the ordinary. And so he says, the likeness of this fourth person in there is like to the Son of God. And it impresses him so much that he draws close to the furnace himself. So you have to think that one through as well. If it was too hot originally, if it was too hot for the men who threw these characters in, things have calmed down a little bit for the king. You wouldn't catch him walking up, you know? But he gives the order to these men to come out. They come out. I love this next bit. Not a hair on their head is singed. Have you ever, you know, sort of like burnt the, well, ladies, you're probably far too more careful, but occasionally, you know, if I'm cooking and we've got a gas hob, you know, I might suddenly realise that I've left another bit of the hob on and, you know, you've singed the back of your hands, you know? Not a hair. Not a hair was singed. Their clothes looked exactly the same as when they went in. They don't even smell of the fire. But there is something that has changed. Because when they went in, they were bound. And they're not bound anymore. So they haven't come out exactly as they were. I presume that they would not have been able to walk out because they were thrown in totally bound, unable to resist. So they came out, and the people are amazed to see this. So now Nebuchadnezzar, he has this sort of change of approach, and he says, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel to deliver these men. But then he reverts to type. Anyone who oppresses them, you know, big trouble, will pull the houses down, will slay them. And then finally the chapter finishes with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego getting a promotion because of what has happened and because of the way in which he has been so impressed with this most unusual series of events. So those are the facts. I want us to think about these facts, and I want to pull together some thoughts based around, first of all, Nebuchadnezzar, the proud man. Okay? Nebuchadnezzar, the proud man. Then I want us to think about three faithful men. Then I want us to think about the fourth man and the missing man. Because there is a missing man in this chapter. So I hope that's got you interested. Let's have a think about Nebuchadnezzar, the proud man. So we're talking about 600 BC. Is actually Nebuchadnezzar the second. There was another Nebuchadnezzar about 500 years before that. So he's actually Nebuchadnezzar the second. And he has grown up in a time where the Babylonians have rebelled against the Assyrian Empire. In the days of Isaiah and Hezekiah and characters like this, the problem was the Assyrian Empire. It was big, it was fierce, and Babylon was just part of their empire. But, you know, not content to be so. And over time, the balance of power has shifted. And the seemingly unbeatable Assyrian Empire has been beaten by the Babylonians. Nebuchadnezzar's father was a man called Nabopolassar. And that name means Nabu, protect the sun. Nabu was one of their gods. So when Nebuchadnezzar's father was born, his name was given to him that one of their gods would protect the boy that was born, who grew up to be king. When Nebuchadnezzar was born, his father named him, Nebuchadnezzar is the name by which we know him, but his name means Nabu, protect the heir. So the father has seen a son born. He himself is he's led the resistance against the Assyrians. And so he's thinking about the young child that has been born. And he gives him the name. He's calling upon his God to protect his son, the next in line to the throne. Which is all very interesting, but in actual fact, it is interesting in the context of this chapter when it comes to a God who can protect. He reigned for 43 years. He expanded the empire. He was a great builder. His empire, you remember we talked about the fact that the provinces, plural, languages, nations. His empire covered parts of Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Jordan, Iran, Saudi Arabia. It was a huge empire. You'll remember from last week, the head of gold. It was far greater even than the Assyrian Empire that had preceded it. The interesting thing too about Nebuchadnezzar is at the end of chapter 2, what what he's saying at the end of chapter 2, verse 47. The king answered to Daniel and said, "Of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret." And the king made Daniel a great man. So the end of chapter 2, when Alistair was with you last week, you would have come to the conclusion that Nebuchadnezzar was won over. That Daniel had shown him that the God that Daniel trusted in was the God of heaven. But chapter 3 starts with Nebuchadnezzar making an image of gold. It's like he learned a lesson in chapter 2, but by chapter 3, he's put that to one side, and he's going back to his old way of looking at things. In chapter 2, we have an image of gold, an image made of different component parts, and the head of gold. It must have been sort of news that he really liked to hear, that he was that head of gold. And it could have gone either of two ways. He could have remained humble before God, but he chose not to. He went the other direction. So that gives us the background to the sort of character that Nebuchadnezzar was. But let's think about these three men, these three faithful men. We encountered them in chapter 1. They stood before the king. They were known for their wisdom and their integrity. Chapter 2, they prayed with Daniel. And as a consequence of the success in telling the king what his dream meant, that they, along with Daniel, they followed in Daniel's train, as it were, and that they were promoted. Now, in chapter 3, what we have is three men who are in a position of authority, and this is where their faith in God is tested to a new level. Chapter 1, it was hard. Live in a new country, you're young, your land has been conquered, and to resist the command of the king and to live in their way and to remain faithful to your God, that was a test and a half, wasn't it? But now it's like this is ratcheted it up big time. It didn't take long for these three men to be severely tested. I don't want to pinch from a later study, but I am. I'm going to quote a verse from Daniel chapter 11. And for those of you that were at the Bible study day that we had up the road, Osborne Road, you'll remember this. So I'm going to quote you from Daniel chapter 11 and verse 32. Now chapter 11, it's the prophetic section of Daniel, but we lift at the end of this verse. "The people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits." Okay? The people that know their God shall be strong and do exploits. Or they shall stand firm and take action. That is obviously referring to a future day, but those words perfectly sum up these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They leave their mark on the page of Scripture. They have been spoken about for hundreds and hundreds of years as an example of absolute faith in their God. I think that this is the key feature of this chapter. I know that there's a lot of perhaps other things in the chapter, but I think the key thing that comes out, the hub, everything's got a hub these days, hasn't it? The hub of this chapter would be this. These three men knew their God. They didn't just know about him. It's not necessarily just what they have been taught. Because if that was the case, then this test might have found them wanting. But these three people knew their God. And that alone, was what they were prepared to risk their lives on. You know, that's what they said to the king. Our God is able. That's the answer to his challenge. What God can save you? Our God is able to do it. He can do it. Think about it for a moment. They were captives in a foreign land. That of itself might have posed the question, why has God allowed us to be taken away from where we belong and brought to a different place? Why has God let that happen? He could have stopped that. But then, of course, the events that have taken place are what God said would take place to prophets like Zephaniah and Habakkuk. The route forward was clearly marked out. See, these three men can help us. They can teach us something really useful. Our God can do it. Our God is able to save us from that burning fiery furnace. He's able to save us from it. Not just in general terms, our God is able to save us, but specific. Our God can save us from that place. And he will. But if he doesn't, we're still not going to bow down. Now, this is the challenge that all of us face. In that we know what God can do, and we need to have more confidence in our God of the things that we know that he can do. Rather than just sort of say, yeah, I know he can do that, but the old nagging doubts still remain and so on. There are grounds to be, if you like, more positive in that sense. But also, there is an acceptance on their part that God may choose not to. And if he chooses not to, they're okay about that. And we find that difficult, don't we? We know what God can do. I'll use an example. Stu, our oldest son, he's working down in Surrey. He's got a house in Lincolnshire. He cannot get anyone to buy that house. We had a long chat with him about it, and we said to him, you know, something that he would in the past have done, to pray about it. We said, we will pray. We will commit to praying every day until this thing is sold. Well, that was fine. But we've done that. And we firmly believe that the house could be sold in a day. It just takes one person to come along and want it. It can be sold in a day. God could do it. But it hasn't happened. So the acceptance has to be that there's a reason why. And we don't know what that reason is. But he does. And we have to go with that. This is the lesson that comes out from these faithful men, these three faithful men. They knew what their God could do. They knew their God. They knew his ways. What an encouragement to us that we have the opportunity to, through our reading, through prayer, and through listening to helpful teaching, that we can get to know God in a deeper way that will make a difference to the way that we approach difficulties and problems in life. So that we don't just say things knowing that they're true, but if you like, our heart's not really in it. But we actually say it, mean it, believe it. So this, I think, is the key to this chapter. The people that know their God shall be strong. They will take actions. And these things certainly happened in this chapter. So as far as these three characters are concerned, you can't help but being reminded of the words earlier in the Old Testament, them that honour me, I will honour. That's a principle that really sticks. What do you think the heart of God felt when he heard those words? Our God can do it, and he will do it, but if he doesn't do it, we're still going to retain our integrity. It's not out of stubbornness. It's not because they don't like getting bossed around. It is because they've been asked to do something which is wrong. And they're even prepared to tell a king to his face with a fiery furnace so close. Special people. Three faithful men. Let's think now about the missing man. There is a missing man. And when you think about it, it's sort of like obvious, really. The missing man is Daniel. Where on earth is Daniel? Daniel, right, okay. So, you know, you may have sort of thought about this before. Why is Daniel missing? Well, various explanations have been given. It doesn't do you any harm to think those through. Okay? So here's the first explanation. Daniel is not in the fiery furnace because he's an important man. He's been put in a position of power. He's the man that rules the province of Babylon, and that he didn't have a problem with it. He went ahead and did it. Well, let's kick that one into touch straight away. But not just let's think this through. Why would Daniel not do that? Because right through the book of Daniel, that is his character. As a young man, he says, no, we're not prepared to go down that route. We're careful what we eat. We're careful what we drink. We don't want to be drawn into associations that are not right. Going to chapter 6, you're not to pray. That's the right thing to do. So Daniel is a man who, through this book, he is consistent in his actions. And if chapter 6 will tell you, with a personal sort of target on his back, he's not prepared to back down. He's not prepared to, if you like, wave his normal practice. So for those that might suggest that, you know, he didn't see a problem with it, no. That we'll kick that one into touch straight away. So the next thing is, was he exempted? Because he was important, did they give him a pass? Did Nebuchadnezzar say, look, I'm making all these others do it, but you don't have to do it because I know that you don't want to? But there's nothing in the chapter that suggests that that kind of approach would be taken. The chapter actually makes it very clear that this command that went out was universal. They were drawing people in from all over the place for this dedication of this idol. The king's command was universal. All of the officials of all the provinces of the empire were summoned. It is very difficult to believe that they would go to all this trouble, and we know the kind of man that Nebuchadnezzar was. It's very difficult to believe they go to all this trouble and have a man sitting in Babylon and say, but it's all right, you don't have to worry about this. That's a non-contender. So, here's another suggestion. He was there, but he wasn't singled out by the people that pointed out Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. So he turned up, he didn't bow down, just like Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, but he wasn't the focus of attention as these three men were. That is unlikely too. Very unlikely. But just thinking about these things, I don't know if you ever do this, but just thinking about these things, you work these things out. It's good for you because you're thinking about, well, okay, it's very well to just, oh no, that couldn't possibly be. Why can't it be? Where is the evidence? Where are the facts that help you to reach that kind of solution? You think these things through. So therefore, he wasn't present. He wasn't within earshot of the music. Suggestions have been made that he'd been sent on the king's business somewhere else. It's possible. So what I can tell you is he was missing. What I can't tell you is why. But I do know that some of the suggestions that are being forward are just not, they're non-runners, okay? We can guarantee that Daniel would not have bowed down. Absolutely no. And the best thing to do is to leave it just there. It's interesting that when it comes to chapter 6 and the den of lions, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, they don't get a mention. It's just Daniel on his own. It may not be, well, it's quite possible that they weren't around at that time because the events of the book of Daniel are over a prolonged period of time. But I want to just finish with some thoughts on the fourth man. Being thrown into the fiery furnace should have brought about a quick, painful death. But as we noted already, they were unbound, they were walking freely, they were unharmed. This is a powerful display of divine protection. It's nothing less. And it's not just a powerful display by divine protection. I had the privilege of speaking to children this week about the days of Hezekiah and the power of prayer and of how thousands in the Assyrian army fell through one angel. Powerful divine protection, But this is something extra. This is something different. Divine presence. Perhaps you can't rely upon Nebuchadnezzar when he says it looks like a son of the gods or a son of God. But what we can say is that throughout the Old Testament, there are incidents where a visible appearance of God, perhaps, certainly in certain instances, the pre-incarnate, before Jesus came into this world, okay? That there were occasions in the Old Testament when he was here for a specific reason. Now, in sort of the theology of it is, it's called a theophany, a visible appearance of God, or a Christophany, when it's thought to be the pre-incarnate Christ. I'll give you a couple of examples in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 18 to Abraham. Genesis chapter 32, Jacob. These are instances where it's not just sort of heavenly visitors, but specifically something more than that. It appeals to me like this, as far as these three men are concerned. God's reward for the faithfulness of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was not only that he delivered them from the fiery furnace. Okay? That would have been special, wouldn't it? God's reward was that they did not face the fiery furnace just together on their own. They missed out, I'd suggest, they missed out on the fact that Daniel would have been there, right? He would have been the fourth man in the fire, possibly. Except that he wasn't there for whatever reason. But there was a fourth man in the fire. Because God drew near to those three men. That is the special reward for special faith. It's better than if Daniel had been with them. And I'll finish just with the observation that even in a foreign land, with a heathen king who was quite a ferocious character, even being picked upon by courtiers and the like, and thrown into a fiery furnace, they were never alone. That is like a big takeaway point for all of us today. The believer is never alone. We don't always sense the presence of the Lord with us, but he has promised, and he won't break that promise. Sometimes we're a bit slow. Sometimes, quite understandably, what we're going through sort of distracts our attention. We take our eye off the fact that we are not alone. These three men have taught us this evening about the way that God appreciates and treasures genuine, simple, but profound faith in him, and how he was with them right through the trial. Now, Nebuchadnezzar decided that they needed a promotion because of this, because of their integrity, because of their faithfulness. Nebuchadnezzar promoted them. But that counts as nothing, really, the real estimation is what God thought of them. How he weighed up what they'd done, their thinking, their motives, the things they thought, not just the things that they said. And his reward is far greater than anything that Nebuchadnezzar could promise. Let's pray.